Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, February 7, 2024, on 91.7 FM, WHUS Doors. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host Ron Menizza is under the weather, so he is downstairs. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You can also check out my Facebook page and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. All right, so what's going on with health stuff? Okay, so we're still going through this Lyme Bartonella thing, and I did figure out that I had to back off on the lime herbs as well as the modified citrus pectin. The modified citrus pectin was giving me some downstairs digestive upset. So I figured out that I have to limit it to two scoops a day. Two scoops a day of modified citrus pectin is still a lot, because if you look at the container recommends that you only take one scoop a day. Dr. Mariah was recommending that I take three scoops a day in divided doses, which I was doing, but it just wasn't working. And I don't know if that's because I do eat a lot of fiber in my diet, so there was just too much going through. It was getting stuck together, and I would get blocked up and then release, and it wasn't a good scene. So now I'm doing two scoops a day, and in fact, and the way that I'm doing it is in three times a day divided doses. So I'm getting in two-thirds of a scoop three times a day. That's how I'm doing it. And if you do your math, you realize that winds up being two scoops a day. So remember, when you multiply fractions, you multiply them and they cross denominators and stuff like that. So anyway, that's what I'm doing, and that's working for me. The other thing is, I went to the dark side. I was getting a lot of breakthrough mild tremors, and they just weren't stopping, and I was continuing to do either that two times a day or three times a day Buner herb protocol. And I just wasn't feeling well. And I finally decided to do some research on, should I take the top off by taking an antibiotic? And the issue with taking an antibiotic when you have tick-borne illness is that it mostly only takes care of actively dividing cells. It doesn't so much take care of bacteria that are in the stationary phase, and it doesn't so much take care of bacteria that are in persister state. So if it's behind a biofilm, and if it's in an encysted form, it's probably not going to get it, an antibiotic. And when the bacteria sees the antibiotic, they tend to develop resistance. The ones that are not resistant to it will be killed, and the ones that are will persist, and they'll stay in your body. So that is an unfortunate thing. The thing is, I am still taking herbs to take care of persisters. So I figured if I had a little, the antibiotic to take the extra off the top, that the herbs that I'm taking can focus on the persister cells more, and I would just feel a little bit better. So the antibiotic I decided to take was azithromycin. So azithromycin, usually when you are treating tick-borne illness, and especially if you're treating Bartonella, which we are presuming that I have, and that is what is causing most of the tremors, you do azithromycin along with another agent. And azithromycin is often paired with rifampin, which I didn't want to take. Rifampin is a heavy-duty drug that has oculotoxicity associated with it. That means it can be toxic to the eyes. It is a drug that is primarily used to treat tuberculosis, so it's a real heavy-duty drug, and I didn't want to take that. I've taken Z-Pax before. Sometimes I have to take azithromycin if I have a bronchitis. I do that once in a great while. Haven't had to do that in several years. However, when I had COVID-19 exactly 1 year ago, 1 year ago to this day, I had COVID-19. I do not have it right now. I'm very happy about that. I was given azithromycin by my functionally medicine-oriented PCP. And when I looked into studies on azithromycin and COVID-19, there were some studies that show that it does go after COVID-19. Now, one of the things you may be thinking is, why would you take azithromycin if you have a viral infection? So one of the interesting things, so let me get into that later because I'm going to talk about colds and flu in a little bit. So I'll talk about me and azithromycin and a cold that's going through our house. All right. So azithromycin, you usually pair it for Bartonella with rifampin, which I didn't want to take. You can also pair it with methylene blue. So methylene blue is a blue dye that if you take it, your urine and feces will come out blue. And you will stain your toilet, and it's actually hard to rub off because it's a dye. It's intended to dye things, but it is methylene blue with azithromycin is a common pairing if somebody has both Lyme and Bartonella. And I want to hold off on that too because I'm concerned about the side effects of methylene blue, and I'm also concerned about the whole staining situation because the staining wouldn't just happen at home. It would happen at the office too, and it'd be a big mess. So that's a real concern for some people that, you know, if you're going to take methylene blue, you're going to stain your toilet. I don't know if there are ways around that, like you put some kind of a, you know, you just put bleach in your toilet all the time, you know, just have bleach going every day. That would be one way to handle it, I suppose. But I decided not to do that. And then another drug that you can take when you are, if you're treating Lyme and Bartonella, is one of the fluoroquinolones. That's going to be like your anything that ends in floxacin. So that's ciprofloxacin, moxifloxacin, levofloxacin. There's a bunch of floxacins. Often ciprofloxacin is the one that's given. So you pair azithromycin with ciprofloxacin, and you think that's a commonly used antibiotic. Not a good idea, and a lot of docs don't like to use it because of the propensity towards tendon rupture and damage. And I did have a patient come in who had tendinopathy as a result of taking a fluoroquinolone. So didn't want to do that either. So what I decided to do is just take azithromycin, which I've had success with before. I tolerate it well. Doesn't give me an upset stomach. It does. All antibiotics in general are going to give you, something is going to happen with your bowels. So that's unfortunate. And so in my case, things are a little bit softer. I am taking a double dose of Saccharomyces boulardii. So when I take my azithromycin, I take Saccharomyces boulardii with it. And Saccharomyces boulardii is a probiotic yeast. And it can't be killed by azithromycin because azithromycin goes after mostly bacteria and viruses. So it's not going to go after the Saccharomyces boulardii. So I doubled up on that, and that really helped. And the other thing you have to do is you really have to stay away from refined flour and sugar and mostly eat high-fiber things, vegetables and fruit, nuts and seeds, and clean protein, and just, you know, and then you fare better. But you can't get away from some level of yeast growth, but it will be minimized the less sugar and starch that you eat and the less... And if you take Saccharomyces boulardii. So I tell all my patients when they go on an antibiotic to take Saccharomyces boulardii, one or two caps a day, which amounts to 5 or 10 billion organisms at a time. And so I'm doing that. And I found that the results were as I had hoped, that when I started taking the azithromycin, it took the top off. That low grade, I'm going in and out of some mild tremors. I mean, and I'm doing all these other things. I'm taking a lot of other supplements. I'm taking quercetin a couple times a day. And I'm taking resveratrol and curcumin and fish oil and MCT oil and black cumin seed oil. And some of those are aimed at the post-vaccine syndrome. And some of those are aimed at the at just reducing inflammation. So I'm taking a lot of stuff, and it's kind of tiring, and trying to eat fiber, taking some things to help rebuild and protect nerves like benfotiamine and phosphatidylserine. And then there are herbs in my herbal cocktail that are neuroprotective, like Japanese knotweed and kudzu. So I'm still continuing to take all of that stuff. I'm only, like I said, I'm down to 2 scoops a day, which is 5 grams twice a day of the modified citrus pectin, and I'm tolerating that. So, and then the other thing I do is in the middle of the night, I wake up somewhere between 3 and 5 in the morning, whenever I happen to wake up to use the bathroom, that's when I take chlorella. So I'm taking the chlorella every day, regardless of what's going on. If I have a day where I am having some tics and tremors, then I will take other binders. And those binders would be things like zeolite. I have a binder that combines zeolite and activated charcoal and fulvic acid and aloe. There are other binders that have other things in them that will have the chlorella as part of the ingredients, but the ones that I have don't have the chlorella. Chlorella I'm taking every day. Mariah told me take chlorella, so I'm taking chlorella. And I have learned something that if Mariah tells you to do it, you do it. Although I am not taking the full dosing that she had recommended, and I did go on to the antibiotics. And after a while, like I said, I couldn't tolerate the modified citrus pectin, and I was concerned about taking the full doses of the Buhner herbs while cutting back on the modified citrus pectin. And I may experiment with that. I also happen to be taking black walnut glycerite that I ordered. And when I'm done with the glycerite, I may try to take the tincture as well, because black walnut is something that can go after definitely both of them, Lyme and Bartonella. And if you have any parasites on board, your black walnut and your sweet Annie, which I'm taking as well, your Artemisia annua, is going to go after that too. So I went to the dark side. I'm taking azithromycin. Azithromycin I consider to be my friend. Now, so the interesting thing is that azithromycin, as I'm taking it, I'm only taking just the azithromycin as an antibiotic, and I'm not taking the other pairings with it. So I hope that I get a good result, because I really didn't want to. There were various reasons why I didn't want to take the other things. And I intend, once I'm done with the antibiotic course, Dr. LaGuardia gave me a 2-week course. And he also, the studies show 500 milligrams a day. And he said, that's a bit high. Let's do 250 and let's do 2 weeks and see how you do. So I'm going to do 2 weeks, and if I'm still somewhat symptomatic after the 2 weeks, I'm going to ask for another 2 weeks. But so far, so good. I did have one episode of tremors last night, and I'm not sure if that was because I ate too much or I ate a bit of sugar. And the other thing that's going on is that Ron has a cold right now, and he tested himself. It's not COVID-19. That's why I'm doing my show on my own and on a different day than him, because we're separated. I didn't want to be in the studio room at the same time as him breathing in his aerosols, because I didn't want to catch the cold. So far, I have not caught the cold, and it is possible that I won't catch the cold because I'm taking so many things, and I'm taking a lot of anti-inflammatories and things that are antiviral. I'm taking Chinese skullcap and Japanese knotweed and all these lime herbs have antiviral properties as well. And I'm taking azithromycin. So the interesting thing about azithromycin is that, the idea is that you're not supposed to take an antibiotic if you have a viral infection. And that makes sense because generally antibiotics go after bacteria. That's true. And I even read on a CDC site and a MedPage site and, some very conventional sites, if you take azithromycin while you have the common cold, it's not going to get rid of your common cold because it's antibacterial, it's an antibiotic, and it won't go after it. But if you then go a little deeper and go into some PubMed studies and look at specifically at azithromycin does have antiviral activity, and it has antiviral activity against COVID. That's been studied, and that's why I got it. That's why it was given to me last year. And it also has antiviral activity against rhinoviruses. So we don't know what Ron has, if he has a rhinovirus or a more benign coronavirus or an adenovirus. Probably has a rhinovirus. More likely because he's not super sick. He's just got, it's all in his head. And what I'm seeing in the community is that people are just getting what they're calling a head cold. That's mostly up in their head. It's not, they're not getting a bronchitis with it, but they feel under the weather and tired and stuffed and runny nose and, sinus headaches and all that kind of stuff. And that's exactly what Ron has right now. And he tested himself for COVID-19 and it was negative. So thank goodness for that. And so far I have not caught it. And so let's talk a little bit about that. So moving on from the latest with Lyme and Bartonella and stuff. Okay, so it's definitely cold and flu season. I'm seeing a lot of people get colds, and one of the things that I'm still doing, because I'm still dealing with a lot of health stuff, I'm not seeing people in the office if they have acute cold and flu symptoms, nor if they have acute gastroenterituses. If that happens, they are given the option to do a virtual visit, which most of them do, and sometimes they just reschedule. And if they're not feeling well, of course they reschedule. So we don't expect somebody if they're not feeling well. Sometimes you're feeling so bad that you don't even want to come into the doctor, and you don't even feel well enough to sit through a virtual visit, which we completely understand. So we just move them. And meanwhile, a lot of people, if somebody in the house is sniffling, they just do virtual. And so I appreciate that when that happens, because it's just for me to get an illness on top of what I'm dealing with now just would be so hard. So I appreciate when my patients are sensitive about that. And because I've been talking about my health struggles on social media, patients are coming in and ask me, hey, I'm following you. Hey, how are you doing? And boy, do I appreciate that. So again, you know, for me as a naturopathic physician to be going through this illness, one of the things that I am doing is trying everything to get myself well and then learning about it and telling you about it, not because, you know, I'm self-absorbed, but because I am you absorbed. I want you to know about it because these are things that could be helpful to you. And of course, I'm learning, I'm writing it all down. And then the things that work for me, I'm going to recommend to you, whether it's here or if you come to see me. Then it's always when you get a smart naturopathic physician who unfortunately gets an illness, they learn about the illness from the inside, what it feels like, what to recommend, what works, what doesn't. Of course, you're an N of one. You're only looking at what works for you specifically. But still, you know, it's a learning experience. And so here we are dealing with this cold. And I talked to a friend yesterday. By the way, big shout out to all the folks that in Willimantic who did the Polar Plunge. There's a Polar Plunge for Hunger that happens every year. I guess it happens on the first Saturday of February. And they go down to Philip Ladder Park, which is in Willimantic, just over the Mansfield Line. And there's a little beach there, and they run into the water for a few seconds, and then they run out. And it's mostly sponsored by the Eastern ECSU rugby team, because if you play rugby, you know, give blood, play rugby, it's you tend to be a hearty soul. So let's do a polar plunge. So the polar plunge, when somebody does a polar plunge, you can sign up, and you can get people to donate on your behalf. So my friend Beth Hankins decided she was going to do the polar plunge. And I didn't realize that Bill Penn, my friend Bill Penn, also did it. And my other friend Lori Riley did it. And Mark Scrivener and Sherry Scrivener, they do it every year as well. I didn't wind up seeing them, but I went over there yesterday at noon to watch them do it. And Beth was so cute. She was wearing a big Viking helmet, and she had a beautiful pink towel around her, and then she took it off and did her polar plunge. She went in twice. She decided she wasn't in long enough the first time, so she went back in. It was very impressive. And you know, now Wim Hof breathing, that you know, intense breathing to get your circulation and immune system going while you're doing a cold plunge is in vogue. I don't know if anybody out there was doing Wim Hof breathing. They might have been, but it was a good time. So big shout out to Beth and Bill and Lori and Mark and all of the other people who went and did the polar plunge and the Willimantic Fire Department who were there for support. And I don't think there were any medical issues, so that was great. But it's a good time. It's a nice community support effort, and it makes money for a good cause. So I was pleased to contribute and also to go there and support my friend. Oh, this is really funny. So my friend Corey, who is also from our Thread City Cyclers bike club, she was there and she was carrying a small plunger. I'm like, why do you have a plunger? She said, because I don't want to run into the water, but I'm supporting the plunge. It's a plunger. I'm plunge adjacent. I'm a plunge supporter. I'm a plunge advocate. I thought that was very funny, just carrying a plunger. And Lori was wearing a frog costume because Willimantic, we're all about the frogs. You know, the whole issue of the frogs. They thought the frogs were the Indians coming to attack, but it wasn't. It was just frogs getting upset because they were running out of water in this pond that's out in Wyndham Center. So, and you can go by the frog pond. It's on Route 14. You can go see it. All right. So what do we do about this cough, cold, and flu season? Maybe not run into a cold plunge, But stay warm. Ron is downstairs sitting in front of the pellet stove, and nice and warm and cozy, and he's got TV and radio and his favorite video game, and he's just hanging out down there. So how do you prevent getting a cold and flu? Sometimes it feels like, you know, you're a sitting duck and you just can't prevent it, especially if it comes into your house and if everybody at work is sick, which is what I'm hearing. So when I went to the Polar Plunge, I saw my friend Stacy and Jack Fulton. I saw Stacy there, and she works in the school. She's an occupational therapist. And she said, everybody's sick at school, and she's wearing a mask when she goes in. And it's just going around like crazy. And that's what I'm seeing, too, that a lot of people are getting colds and flu. And I'm having that situation where people are either canceling their visits or flipping to virtual because they or someone in their house has sniffles. So that's definitely something that we're seeing. So how do you prevent it? Well, one way that you can prevent it is if you're going into spaces where there are a lot of people, you can consider still wearing a mask. I think a mask is going to be more effective if you're also spraying your nose. I do definitely see people at the stores wearing masks when they're shopping. And I am not wearing a mask in the office right now, but we're screening people for symptoms. And that may not ultimately protect me, but I tend not to catch things from the patients. I tend to catch them somewhere else. And especially from Ron, and Ron's thing is that he's in a time of year where he's seeing a lot of people in his work. So that's part of how it's happening. So you may decide that you want to continue to wear a mask when you go into public spaces, especially where there are a lot of people. And you especially want to do that if you're very concerned about catching a cold, like you can't afford to miss work, or you're about to go traveling, especially if you're going to travel to a vulnerable relative or a vulnerable person, or you're caregiving to a vulnerable person. So you may want to consider masking because of that. And so that's when you see people out in public wearing masks, it's often there's something like that going on, that they just, it's not a fear thing. It's that they're interacting with people that either they have to work, they want to up their chances of not having to miss work, and also that they're caregiving or spending time around people who are vulnerable. So please be kind. If you see somebody wearing a mask, smile at them and treat them like they're anybody else. There are people who are like, why are you still wearing a mask? Lots of reasons, and whatever the reason is, it's actually none of your business unless they tell you. And be supportive, and consider wearing a mask yourself. You don't have to, but you can. It's a choice. There's not as much social pressure to do it, but you can if you want to. All right. So other things to help to protect you from getting sick is make sure you're getting enough rest. People still tend to do too much in the winter. And what happens is you're very busy at the holidays and you're, running around doing all kinds of stuff at the holidays, eating foods that maybe aren't as good for you. You get gifted with a lot of treats and sweets this time of year. And you're used to pushing yourself and doing all that visiting, maybe some traveling. People definitely got COVID from the holidays. I heard that people are like, I got COVID for Christmas. That happened to a lot of people. They traveled, they went somewhere, they did big family gatherings, and everybody got COVID. Or half the people got COVID. Not everybody gets it when they're exposed, because immune systems are different at different times. And so what happens this time of year to some people is that they get through the holidays, and then they get into activities in January, and they push it too hard. They don't take their rest this time of year like they should, and they continue to work really hard and push themselves. And so, classically, in our house, we get sick the end of January, beginning of February. We had COVID-19 this minute. Exactly a year ago, Ron tested positive on the 31st, and I tested positive on the 1st, and it's still early January, and I tested positive until like February 10th, and so I didn't go to the festivities, the chocolate festival in Willimantic, nor the co-op birthday party, because I was still testing positive. I tested negative for Valentine's Day. One of the things that I got in addition to chocolate was a negative COVID test. So that was nice. But I didn't feel well for a good month. This year, fortunately, we don't seem to have COVID, so that's very exciting. But Ron got sick. So make sure you're getting enough rest. It's okay to lean into, I'm tired, I don't feel like doing anything. That take a day where you really don't do anything, where you do less stuff, and you just lie around. This is a good time to catch up on Netflix, catch up on those library books that you need to read or any books that you have. You can do quiet activities in the house. I have a friend who likes to do crafts this time of year. So she likes to crochet and she likes to knit and she even knows how to tat. She's very talented. So you could do quiet activities like that. If you like to play music, you can play your guitar, or play your piano, or if you play something from the Shona people of Zimbabwe, you can play your thumb piano, your mbira. I was listening to mbira music the other day, and I was like, maybe I should pull out the mbira, call up Kite and get him to show me how to fix my mbira because it's a little out of whack. So doing quieter activities, taking more naps, sleeping more. There's controversy as to whether people sleep more this time of year. There was a study that showed that they didn't. And then there was another study that showed that on the average, people do sleep an hour longer this time of year. When it's dark and the sun rises late and the sun sets early, you tend to get sleepy when it's dark. We are diurnal creatures and we are affected by the amount of light that's in the air. And that will also affect when you produce your melatonin. So your melatonin is going to peak in the evening. And the earlier it gets dark, the higher your melatonin is going to be. Unless you have too many lights on in your house. And too many lights on in your house is going to make it so that it's going to interrupt your melatonin cycle. So you want your melatonin to be reasonably high so that you can go to sleep at night, and then your melatonin will go drop, 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 drop until it's lowest when it's time to wake up in the morning. And your cortisol does the opposite. Your cortisol rises overnight and is highest in the morning, and then it gradually drops over the course of the day. So you have cortisol and melatonin should have an inverse relationship with each other, and they cross midday. It's kind of interesting. Anyway, getting plenty of rest is important because you will produce more melatonin. The more you sleep, the more melatonin you will make. And melatonin helps you to sleep. When you sleep, all kinds of repair happens. All kinds of immune stuff happens. And melatonin supports the function of your white blood cells. So you will have better immune function if you sleep more. So I feel bad for Ron because I don't think he's getting adequate sleep. He likes to get up super early in the morning. So he generally gets up in the 4 o'clock hour on days that he has to teach. And he goes to bed with me somewhere between 10 and 11 o'clock, which means hopefully at some point during the day, he's going to take a nap. But, unfortunately, between what he has going on in the evenings and me getting home at a certain hour, he tends to go to sleep too late. So I think he's a little short on sleep. I am in a fortunate position where I'm able to go to sleep between 10 and 11 and get up most days between 7:30 and 8. And that works for me. And today I just slept in. I wasn't feeling great when I woke up this morning. And I said, all right, I'm staying in. And I think I finally woke up for good at like 8:30 and then dragged myself out of bed at like 9. So that was fortunate. And then since I'm doing my show today, tomorrow morning I can again sleep in and don't have anything that I have to do until maybe 1 in the afternoon. So that's good. So I'm leaning into getting the rest. I'm not scheduling a lot of stuff. I had a friend want to have lunch with me. I'm putting that off till I'm feeling more energetic. And I'm leaning into not feeling very energetic. And then I'm doing things to keep myself calm, like a lot of yin yoga and Epsom salt baths and nervine calming teas and things like that. It makes it so that Friday is my most difficult day of the week, energy-wise, because I've worked a long day on Thursday. Then I have to go right back to the office and see more patients on Friday, and I'm tired. But what I do is when I get out of work, I do a little shop or I have acupuncture, and then I come home and I get rest. I do the yin yoga and the Epsom salt baths, and I generally feel better. I feel sleepy enough to go to sleep, but I don't feel toxically tired anymore. By the time I go to sleep on Friday. And then Saturday, I have a pretty good day. And then if I overdo it on Saturday, then I don't feel so good on Sunday and have to get extra rest. But so Sunday has been my extra rest day lately. So I can't emphasize too much how important rest is for you and that if you are feeling like you're dragging, this is a time of year to lean into that and go ahead and do it. Take extra naps, do quieter activities, don't feel pressured to spend time with friends, or if you spend time with friends, do it in a quiet way. Do it, you know, have people over in the afternoon and sit and embrace the Danish concept of hygge, H-Y-G-G-E, where you do calm, quiet activities and then just enjoy each other's company without doing anything that's too much. I see that there are people who are riding their bikes, like they're doing Zwift and they're doing long bike rides on Zwift, and other people who are doing very long hikes. And, you know, if that works for you and you don't get sick and you're not overtired, that's great. That's not me this time of year. And I mean, and obviously I'm going through a health issue, so I need to do all the things to help support my immunity. So going for very long hikes is not going to be one of those things. I generally have to cut back. In the last few years, I have to cut back on how much activity I do this time of year, including, so I tend to do more yoga, and yoga doesn't tend to tire me out. Whereas, you know, excess time on the bike is going to do that. And if I were to go on a long hike, that would tire me out as well. All right. So other things for prevention of colds and flu, drink plenty of fluids, especially water and herb tea. What I have in this glass is I happen to have some flavored seltzer water with lemon in it. That's a little flat. It's orange vanilla flavor. So anyway, drinking, the other thing about throwing lemon in anything is it helps to clear mucus. It's nice and astringent and pushes your liver to detoxify. So plenty of fluids, especially water and herbal tea. Seltzer is okay too. I wouldn't have seltzer instead of water, but if you want to have a glass or two of seltzer a day, I think it's fine. Especially if it gets you to drink more fluid, because, you know, seltzer has no calories. You can throw in a little bit of fruit. If you get seltzer with fruit in it, it's going to have a little bit of calories. That's okay too, if it gets you to drink it. It's easy to get dehydrated this time of year because you're in hot environments, or you're in artificially heated environments. And when you have artificial heat, it tends to dry the air out. You don't realize that you're dehydrated. And if you're not feeling well, one of the reasons is could be that you're dehydrated. And I hear people tell me that they forget to drink. So this is where those great big drink containers come in. Try to finish one of those great big drink containers at least once a day, and fill them with a temperature that works for you. Room temperature, cold, hot, whatever you'll get in. Yes, in Chinese medicine, they say it's not a good idea to drink iced cold water. But if that's what you like and you're more likely to drink it, if there's ice in it, just drink it, because, you know, you have to work with where people are at. And I know that my mouth, even this time of year, when it's dry, it feels hot and I feel thirsty and I still want something cold to drink. I don't necessarily want great big glasses of ice cold stuff. And there are times when I do want something warm, but I'm sipping on, my preferred temperature is on the cool side. This had an ice cube in it, which has since melted. I'll sit and drink I'll drink it when it's room temperature, but I prefer it a little on the cold side. And that is a constitutional and personal preference. So make sure to drink. One of the reasons to drink is that your mucous membranes will stay hydrated. If your mucous membranes are dry, you're not going to have mucus on board. One of the properties of mucus is that it contains white blood cells and immune globulins. And if you inhale viruses, you want your immune globulins to fight against them. And if you don't have adequate mucus, you're not going to have adequate immune globulins. And the other thing that is carried in your mucus is probiotic. You have beneficial bacteria in all of your mucous membranes. That's in your entire digestive system from end to end. And also in your eyes, any part of you that communicates with the outside world has probiotic in it. So your nose has beneficial bacteria in it. Your entire respiratory tract has beneficial bacteria in it. And the beneficial bacteria are going to help your immune system. They're going to outcompete bad guys, bad bacteria and viruses, and they're going to stimulate your white blood cells to work. So contained in mucus, you have immune globulins, immune polysaccharides, and you have So immune globulins are proteins, then you have immune polysaccharides, and then you also have beneficial bacteria, which are all going to help your help you fight microorganisms, whatever kind they are. So hydrate. All right. So avoid refined sugar and starches. The problem with refined sugar and starches, a number of problems with refined sugar and starches. One is that they cause you to have higher insulin, and insulin pushes a lot of inflammatory compounds. If you have more inflammation going on just because you ate sugar, and then you get an infection on top of that, your immune system is already occupied, having been raised by the sugar, and you're not going to be able to fight the infection as easily. The other thing is that when you consume sugar, even if you're not a big yeast person, you will have some yeast overgrowth, and yeast will compete for resources with your beneficial bacteria, and so you'll have more yeast and unfriendly bacteria around that tend to overstimulate your immune system. Most of your immune system is in your gut. It's in from all the way from mouth to the other end. Most of it is in the colon, but you do have some in your small intestine. You have to have some because you consume beneficial bacteria, and that's how it gets down there. It goes through the whole cycle of getting through the small intestine, and then it makes its way to your colon. So if you eat sugar, you're going to tend to have more unfriendly bacteria and more yeast, and so that's another way that that you wind up having more likelihood of getting sick. And if you're eating sugar, you're going to be less likely to be hungry for the things that are good for you. So that's another thing that can happen. And sugar itself, if you have bacteria that are collecting at the back of your throat, bacteria viruses collecting at the back of your throat, and you feed them sugar, they'll grow faster. So staying away from starches and sugars is going to be helpful for you. All right. And so, as I said, this time of year, you tend to crave it more because you're craving heavier food, because you just want to sit around and not be so active and eat more because it's cold out. So you have to be careful of that. And the other thing that I said was that people still have leftover gifts from the holidays. You still have leftover candy from the holidays and maybe some other pastries, and maybe not pastries, depending, but you have leftover stuff from the holidays while you're not getting as much activity, so you're going to tend to eat more sugar. So you have to be careful of that. Do eat produce, fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds and beans. They're going to help you to build your good probiotics. They have a lot of fiber that are going to help you to do that. So vegetables have all kinds of vitamins and minerals, carotenoids, beta carotene, different kinds of phytonutrients. Various fruits and vegetables have anthocyanins in them, which are great antioxidants. And your nuts and seeds are going to have a lot of fiber and monounsaturated fatty acids that are anti-inflammatory. And your beans are going to have good soluble fiber. That's a great prebiotic that you're going to help to grow your good bacteria on. And it's going to help to regulate your blood sugar as well. If you have higher blood sugar, you're going to tend to get more infections as well. All right. If you don't crave salad this time of year because it's cold out, that's okay. Just eat cooked produce. So you want to do more soups and stews and stir fries and steamed vegetables, things that are, because it's soothing to eat things that are warm this time of year. Speaking of warm stuff, you can eat foods that are spicy. So foods that have ginger. Ginger is a great anti-inflammatory, and it's warming and it helps to clear mucus. Turmeric is also a great anti-inflammatory, especially for the digestive system. Cayenne is great. It helps to open up your respiratory passages. It helps to open up circulation, and the resins in it are antimicrobial. Black pepper as well. Black pepper also has those spicy properties in that it's going to help to open up your respiratory passages. Black pepper also helps to guide make other spices more absorbable. So you're going to get more constituents in circulation if you consume black pepper. Cinnamon is a great antimicrobial. I'm actually doing edible cinnamon essential oil as part of my tick-borne illness treatment. I'm taking two little tiny drops of concentrated cinnamon essential oil. It tastes really good, with a drop of clove oil. And those are antimicrobial, and they've been shown by Dr. Zhang to kill Lyme disease. So that's one reason that I'm taking them. And it's going to also be antimicrobial to anything else that's floating around. So all of your culinary spices have some health benefits, including tasting good. So they help with gas. They help with your digestion. They help to get rid of unfriendly bacteria. And they have anti-inflammatory and antioxidant properties. Then there's oregano, basil, and cardamom, which have similar properties. Oregano oil is a powerhouse of antimicrobial activity, and the carvacrol in oregano has also been shown to kill Lyme disease. All right, do get exercise this time of year. Don't do zero exercise, but don't overdo it. It's not a good idea to overdo it. And as we see with Ron, who's on his bike, 10, 12 hours a week, or somewhere between 9 and 12 hours a week, I think that was overdoing it. That's part of why he got sick. So if you're pushing yourself to try to get in a lot of workouts, especially if you feel that you're tired, that's not a good idea. You really need to listen to your body. You can do gentle or moderate yoga, walks. If you're a cyclist, just back off on your hours this time of year. It's okay to take some time off or take some time to do alternate activities. A lot of people do go out for hikes this time of year because it's a little bit harder to get on the road in the cold and the wind. And our gravel right now is, it's the temperature's up and down, so it's got water or ice. Or it's rutted. So going on the rail trail is difficult right now because the conditions are not good. So that's unfortunate. And also, your back roads, your gravel roads are difficult at this time. So if you go out and ride, you're going to tend to want to be on the road. The cars are not necessarily expecting you, and there can be hazards in the road like ice and sand and water. If you're cycling indoors, that's great, and make sure you don't overdo it. It can be easy to overdo because one thing about doing Zwift or Trainer Road or going to spin classes is you can do those things any time of day. You don't have to wait for the warm part of the day. You can pick a time of day that works for you, super early in the morning, in the evening. It doesn't matter if it's dark out. So people tend to get addicted to, especially the home apps like Zwift and Trainer Road and other activities where you can go for a long way, or Peloton or whatever it is. When people do those, you could do that all day long. And like, I have a friend who rode his bike mostly on Zwift 20,000 miles last year. I'm like, where do you have the time to do that? And with my health condition, last year I don't know if I made it to 3,000. I was in the twos somewhere, which is still pretty amazing. And this year I hope to ride more. It's all going to depend on how my health works out this year, how far I go. And in the month of January, I may have made it to 100 miles, and that was all virtual. And so far this, because I'm still having some health stuff, and Ron is downstairs making aerosols where I do my workout. So I can't work out down there right now. I think I've ridden 5 miles so far in February, which was yesterday. So, I'll get back on, but everybody has to be healthy for that to happen. So I tend to do more yoga this time of year, and I don't personally prefer power yoga or Bikram yoga. And if you do, that's great. I wouldn't do it every day. But I do moderate yoga a few times a week, and then I tend to do yoga stretches, and I do some kind of restorative calming or yin yoga pretty much every day, because there's no effort, and it's the main purpose of that is to calm me down, just stretch out a bit and do some deep breathing. And deep breathing is a great thing for lowering cortisol and helping your immune system, and just helping you to be calmer. So I do more of that this time of year. And resistance training. This is a nice time of year to get back into resistance training. You can do that indoors. You can do it at a gym, or you can do it in your home. And again, I don't think it's great to push yourself excessively this time of year, because you're going to be more likely to get sick. It's okay to be sick and back off your training. You will get your training back. You will. And the thing is, if you take time off from your training, you're going to get good rest, and you're going to feel like $1 million once you're feeling better and want to get back into it. And then you'll get even stronger than if you didn't rest. If you keep trying to work out while you're sick or tired or not feeling well, you can't exert yourself the way you can when you're feeling good. So there are times when it's better to rest and be on the couch than it is to actually work out. So you have to sort out what that looks like for you. Okay. So if you're trying to prevent illnesses, daily neti pots can be helpful because, again, anything starts growing in there, you're moving it out. And if you do it at least twice a day, you want to have a clean slate before you go to sleep. And you want to start over again in the morning in case there was anything in the environment. At night, you tend to breathe in dust and mold. So you want to get that out of your nose in the morning. And so doing a neti pot twice a day, at least twice a day, is helpful. And then if you've been somewhere where you could have been exposed, then do it again. And so doing the neti pot, after you've done the neti pot, it's a good idea to spray your nose with something that's going to protect you, like something with xylitol in it. Xylitol is great for breaking down biofilms that bacteria make. It's a great antimicrobial. Silver nanoparticles. So if you get a nasal spray that has silver in it, it can help to kill microorganisms as well. Fulvic acid is great. So if you can get a nasal spray that has fulvic acid in it, fulvic acid helps to prevent viruses and bacteria from sticking to the surface of your mucous membranes. So that's helpful too. Sea salt will pretty much kill anything osmotically, and it helps. The nice thing about sea salt is it does osmosis to the microorganisms, and it also does osmosis to the lining of your nasal passages. So if your nasal passages are boggy, the salt in a nasal spray that you're using is going to draw the area of low concentration to the area of high concentration across the semipermeable membrane, which is your nasal mucosa, your nasal lining. So the water is going to tend to go out from your nasal mucosa to meet the salt, the higher concentration of salt on the other side. So it tends to reduce inflammation. And it does that without suppressing your immune system like a steroid would. So, and if you get an over-the-counter nasal steroid that has something like fluticasone, generally they have either fluticasone, mometasone, or budesonide in them. And those things are immunosuppressives, and they will make you feel better, but they will suppress your immune system, and you'll be more likely to get sick. And they also eat up the inside of your nose, because what's the job of corticosteroids? To run around your body looking for stuff to break down, to turn into sugar, so you can run away from the bear. And that means if you put a steroid on topically, whether it's in your nose or on a rash, or you take an inhaler, or even you eat it, if you put it on topically, it's going to eat up the surface that it comes in contact with. So you're going to get irritations and breakdown of the mucosa, and the immune system is going to break down both from suppressing the immune system and the fact that you're actually disrupting the mucosa. So steroids are not my favorite thing. I recommend much happier with things like xylitol, silver, sea salt, fulvic acid, and even tiny amounts of essential oils like tea tree oil going into the nasal passages. After you're done the neti pot and or nasal spray, what do? You gargle, because you're going to spray something in your nose. You have a communication passage in the back of your nose that drips into your throat. So you want to get rid of that stuff that's in the back of your throat. So anytime you do something with your nose, you should be gargling afterwards. So what do you gargle with? Salt water, the essential oils, like tea tree, neem. You could have a little fulvic acid in there. You can have silver in there, sovereign silver, or, you know, silver nanoparticles, all the same stuff. So you want to gargle for a couple of, maybe 30 seconds to a minute at least, a few times a day. If you want to take stuff as preventatives, good preventatives are vitamin C. Vitamin C is great because it has you build collagen, it strengthens the mucous membranes so that they become more impervious to viruses and bacteria. And vitamin C also stimulates the function of white blood cells. So if you have extra vitamin C on board this time of year, that's a good idea. So you can take vitamin C in pills. You can also eat vitamin C. Ron and I had clementines today, and I have lemon in my water. And you will also get vitamin C from things like black currants and tomatoes. And so if you have tomato sauce, there'll be some vitamin C in there. Brussels sprouts, broccoli, all kinds of peppers, whether cayenne or anything in the pepper family, bell peppers as well. They're all going to have extra vitamin C in them. So if you eat a lot of produce, you're going to get vitamin. You get some vitamin C from leafy greens as well. Vitamin D. It's a good idea to get your vitamin D checked. Have your doctor check your levels. You want to be between 35 and 45 nanograms per milliliter, maybe even a little higher than 45. And if you're not at that point, it's a good idea to take vitamin D. It's hard to make vitamin D from the sun in Connecticut because we don't get a lot of it here. This time of year, it's even harder because we're inside a lot and we're covered up. So get your vitamin D level checked and have your friendly naturopath or your primary care physician or whatever doctor you're seeing help you to get the right dose of vitamin D. Vitamin K2, if you have trouble absorbing vitamin D, vitamin K2 can help to drag vitamin D into your body, that you'll do better at absorbing it if you take vitamin K2 as well. And then zinc. Zinc, you can take some zinc every day, and you could do zinc in an oral dose. If you're doing zinc every day, it's a good idea to have copper along with it. And you can do copper in a number of ways. You can get copper nanoparticles and take a little bit of that. You can also get very tiny doses of copper. 1 or 2 milligrams a day is probably going to be fine, depending on how much zinc you're taking. If your copper-zinc balance goes off, it's going to affect your immune status as well. So if you're taking zinc every single day, you want to take copper too. Vitamin A. I take some vitamin A with beta carotene drops. Vitamin A is a wonderful antiviral, helps with normal cell differentiation. So if you take that, it's more protection against getting and maintaining viruses. And then there's quercetin. Quercetin is good to take when you're actually sick, and also for prevention because it's a great anti-inflammatory. Quercetin is nice because it helps to escort antimicrobial substances and nutritive substances into the cells. So quercetin is a good thing to take if you have COVID-19. It's a good thing to take if you have tick-borne illness, like when you have Bartonella and Babesia reside intracellularly. So if you take quercetin, it helps to get stuff into the cells more readily. And it's a great antioxidant and detoxifier as well. And then there's hydrotherapies. There's the wet sock treatment and the throat compress. So you might have heard me talk about the wet sock treatment. In more recent years, I heard that some folks who are going to naturopathic college were calling them magic socks. What makes them wet or magic? Well, what you do is when you're going to sleep, if you're going to be taking a nap or going to bed overnight, you make sure your feet are nice and warm. And if they're not warm, make sure you warm them up in front of the fire. Warm foot bath, warm socks, massage them however you want to get them worn, a heating pad, whatever. Then once they're nice and warm, you get thin cotton socks and roll them out, rinse them out in cold water, because you never put something cold on a cold part. So you put your cold socks on and then you put warm wool socks over top of that, and then you go to sleep. And your body will try to warm those socks up and it'll send congestion out of your head and down towards the socks. So you can use the wet sock treatment when you're congested with anything, whether it's mucus or thoughts or you can't sleep you just need to relax. So anytime you have too much circulation going on in your head, it will help to pull congestion downward. So wet socks is a very simple thing you can do where you don't have to buy anything special and you can help heal yourself. And then there's the throat compress, which is similar. You can do that while you're awake. Make sure that your neck is nice and warm. If it's not, warm your neck up with a warm compress. Then you get a thin cotton cloth or bandana, wring it out in cold water, put it around your neck and put a warm wool scarf around that. And just wait until it warms up. And once that bandana is warmed up, you take the whole apparatus off and you rinse the bandana in cold water again, put it back on and start over. And it'll flush circulation through the lymphatics in your neck. And so you'll get a better flow of lymphatics and drainage through your neck when you do the throat compress. All right. And let's see. So that's the... So that's the wet sock treatment. And then there's Epsom salt baths. Epsom salt baths are so relaxing. I highly recommend them. I wasn't in the habit of doing them until Mariah said, do the Epsom salt baths. And because Mariah told me to do it, I am doing it. So I take an Epsom salt bath every day that I can, which means I'll miss. If I get home really late from work, I might not do an Epsom salt bath that night just because we're winding down. We want to get dinner. We want to get into bed. But if I'm home and it's not too late, like today, I will do an Epsom salt bath. I'll probably do one in the 4 o'clock hour before I do restorative yoga. And it is my habit now at the end of the day, if it's not too late, to do an Epsom salt bath. So that winds up happening probably 5 days a week. And Epsom salt baths, is important to drink extra fluid when you're doing Epsom salt baths because it does tend to move fluid out of you. And I must say, you feel extremely relaxed and happier after you take an Epsom salt bath. And all I do is I fill a tub with warm water and I put in 2 cups of Epsom salts. And if the Epsom, I like lavender in the Epsom salt bath. You can use whatever essential oil makes you happy. I find lavender very relaxing, but you can use herbal teas that are calming, and you can use essential oils if you like. And I just do, if the Epsom salt is plain, I drop in some lavender essential oil, or I just get lavender scented Epsom salt. And I find that it is more expensive to get scented Epsom salt than it is to get plain Epsom salt. So I go back and forth, and I got a good deal online, and I have enough Epsom salt to choke a horse with right now. I wouldn't choke a horse. That's terrible. So the Epsom salt baths, I can't recommend them too much. They are decongesting. They are calming. Getting in a warm bath is really great if you have congestion upstairs or downstairs in your head and or in your chest. It's really soothing. And if you're coughing a lot, it'll help to calm your bronchi down. And then, of course, when you follow the Epsom salt bath, you're probably going to have to pee when you get out of the Epsom salt bath because of the hydrostatic pressure of the water against your blood vessels. So do that. And then make sure you drink plenty of water and or herb tea when you're done with your Epsom salt bath. And then what should you eat or not eat? You should eat only to your hunger and limit to soups and stews and, you know, other kinds of vegetable stuff. Drink lots of water and herb tea. And if caffeine doesn't bother you, black, green, and white tea are fine too. Honey is great if you're sick, if you have a cold or a cough. If you're in the house with someone who is ill, especially a partner, it's up to you if you want to wear a mask around them and have them do the same. If you usually sleep in the same bed as your partner, you may want to sleep separately until the partner is well or you get sick too. If you get sick with the same thing, you might as well not stay apart anymore. That's how we handled COVID last year. Right now, Ron is downstairs because I don't want to get sick. When you're in the same room for that long, you're breathing in your partner's aerosolized virus all night long, and you're more likely to get sick. Ron and I don't like sleeping apart, but we are while he has this cold. When I bring him food, water, and tea, we wear masks, and I'm not spending a long time in the room with him. He'll be well soon. Don't worry. He'll be well soon, and hopefully I won't get sick too. Ron and I often get sick right at this time of year, like I told you, late January, early February. We have both generally started our winter workouts, and right now Ron is teaching 9 fitness classes a week right after going through the holiday season. He's in a room with multiple people who might be in any stage of a viral illness, breathing their aerosols and working out multiple days a week, so he's vulnerable. So now he's downstairs recovering, so he'll do bicycle talk on a different day. So that's what I wanted to talk about today. And I'll talk more about, a few things next week. I'm going to talk about the side effects of too much caffeine, energy drinks, exercise for peri and postmenopausal women, and weight loss. We still have that to talk about. All right. So I'm going to let you go now. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores and WHUS.org. I also wanted to throw in there that there is going to be a broadcast on June 4th through 10th, a Healing Lyme Summit that's hosted by Mariah Hinchey, ND, and Richard Horowitz, MD. It'll be presented by @DrTalksOfficial. So check out @DrTalksOfficial, and they're inviting anyone infected by tick-borne illness to embark on a journey of hope and healing through the free virtual event. They want to educate attendees on the various treatment options beyond the conventional approach and offer hope and connection. That's June 4th to 10th. And you can direct message Dr. Hinchey, and she will tell you more about it. That's at Dr. That's at Dr. Mariah Hinchey, MYRIAHHINCHEY, and she'll give you more information. Or just look up Healing Lyme Summit, and you'll get there that way. All right. So thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next week with more Radio Naturopath.